You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I am so honored to have as my guest an individual that has a great working knowledge for news and multimedia information delivery systems of today, and frankly, a vision for the systems of the future. And with a family experience in this space that dates back to 1917, I really wish we had more than 50 minutes to this day. Bill Marshall Jr. is the president, CEO, and publisher of Form Communications. Bill, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. Thank you for taking time to join me. It's great to see you. How are you?
Great. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for inviting me along. I don't honestly get asked to do a lot of these, so happy to try to impart some thoughts. I was almost said wisdom, but didn't. And I did. I got the thing. I had a yellow T-shirt on, and you said, "No, we're wearing black today." So I'm wearing black. I'm with you.
It's like the best color on the planet.
Yeah, right.
It makes me look like 6 months younger.
Yeah, and I'm much. I'm thinner. So and younger, right?
Bill, as a guy that grew up in Fargo, the Fargo Form, I'm just going to start with that, has been, and it still is, it's just part of my life. And at my age, I can honestly say that it's been part of my life for almost 60 years. I wanted to be a paperboy once, but that was like just the hardest gig in the world to get because so many people.
Now, the bar's pretty high, Mike, yeah.
and then, of course, over time, your company became so diverse, because that's just the nature of life anymore, where it's not just a newspaper, it's not just the newspaper publishing company. You literally are a multimedia force to be reckoned with. And I say that in the most complimentary ways. So for the sake of my knowledge, give me a little background on you personally. I know a lot about the company and your family. I don't know quite as much about you personally, other than you're the CEO, publisher, president.
Yeah, I am 57 years old. Mike and I both went to Shanley, graduates of good Catholic education. I tend to tell people that I'm a recovering Catholic. It's a tough one at times, but grew up in Fargo, went to University of North Dakota, majored in communications, got out of there in 88, told somebody the other day it was 98, and we're exchanging, like talking about professors and people in the class, and I knew nobody, and they thought I was an idiot. Then I walked away, and I'm like, God, you know, it was 88, not 98. Jeez, that's graduated in 88 and moved down to Minneapolis and tried to make my career in advertising, the advertising world, and got zero jobs, sent out resumes, went on interviews, zero. The only place that would hire me was a small newspaper out on Lake Minnetonka called The Enterprise. And I started selling advertising. That was in 88. And was down there for 5 years. And then decided to come back to Fargo. And I got married and came back to Fargo in 92. I think it was 92. So I've been in Fargo since 92, came back to the newspaper. I'm fifth generation. My great-great-grandfather bought the newspaper, as you mentioned, 1917. And it was one newspaper back then. Today we're four television stations. We are 20 newspapers with about 70 to 80 titles. That's magazines, monthly, Shoppers, everybody has a website. I think we have over 100 websites. We have a commercial printing division and, of course, the broadcast division. So we were up to 2,500 employees at one time. Now we're a little over 1,000. So as the industry, and I'm sure we'll probably get into that, has changed, so has our company and our footprint and size of that. But so I started out selling advertising in Fargo. And I moved to circulation. Then I moved to, production. Spent 3.5 years in production. We bought a new press. I learned all of, how to put ink on paper, which at the time seemed like a great thing to learn. You know, you can't imagine. It was like, oh, my God, you know, we won't be doing that as much anymore. But and then moved throughout the company learning about the business and became general manager of the firm. Back when our circulation was about 70,000 printed newspapers a day, that was the high water mark. It's not that today. So that was 30 plus years ago, 31 years ago, and became CEO 6 years ago. My father's still around. He's chairman of the board. We still talk at least once a week. He's 85 years old in great health. My mom is somewhat involved too. We talk all the time and they still love the business. That's briefly my story. Was it brief enough? We can edit.
Yeah, that was great. By the way, I got to show you this. That's my UND student ID.
Look at you with the hair.
Yeah. Wow. It doesn't matter anymore. Your hair's kind of irrelevant for when you get to be my age. That was a great school, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a good school. It is a good school. I still go up there every once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I have always noticed about your company, and I noticed it when I was managing radio stations for Jim Lackaduck, of course, another Fargo guy, and was trained to really pay attention to what newspapers do for a variety of reasons. They have, because especially back then, that was a real personal thing. People spent, they might be section readers, but that paper was so personal. It dominated, generally speaking, most of the advertising budgets for the people that you're going after. But then also pay attention to trends. And one of the things I'll never forget, and I think you might have hired this guy from Bismarck. The day you changed the company, I'm not sure if that was under your leadership or not, because it was probably about 30 years ago, all of a sudden the business section of the Fargo Firm changed dramatically. It was like, a double truck kind of thing. Great pictures, great stories, great information. And I said to myself, oh, great. This is also another way to just keep taking advertising dollars away from people that are competing against it. But that's when I really noticed how on the front edge of great ideas your company was, Bill, because that was a big deal.
Do you remember who that was? You know, we've had a really strong business section, gosh, since I can remember, and some newspapers don't. We do, and we've kept that even today. Do you remember that guy's name?
It could be a Gilmore. That I think he worked for the Bismarck Tribune
30 years
and
ago.
Ended up
okay. There's been a couple of Gilmores, but yeah, on the news side, we had a reporter, name totally slips me. The business side has been important to us. We see that in each one of our communities, you know, and as our business has changed, and I really feel like we've come on the other side of it. If we would have had this interview maybe 3-4 years ago, it would be different today because I would have a complete lost look in my face. And today I don't, I still might have the lost look, but I don't inside. I know where we're going. my dad did, strangely enough, I think it was working on 40 or 50 years ago. It was when I was a little kid in the 70s. He had made a deal with a computer company and they had these big, big CRT terminals and they were going out. I can't remember who they made the deal with, but they envisioned way back then that farmers would be able to have this computer sitting on their desk and tapped into our information. This was the 70s, right? This was just invested in that. So my dad has always been like, okay, what's next? And, sometimes I ask myself 10 years ago, what am I doing here? And I think, it was my place in our family history to take this. Cause I'm terrible at golf. I'm awful at sitting around doing nothing. And I don't sleep very well. I got to stay up and think about, okay, what are we going to do next? Cause I can't golf. I've tried. And I can't fish. I wish I could fish. I see those guys fishing and I'm like, that has got to be bliss, man. I'd love that, but it's not me. So we have to continually find out what's next. And that's been our company's motto since I can remember.
Well, we'll talk about what's next in a second, but Bill, most golf courses, if they see me getting close to the property, they escort me off because I'm no good. I hunt and fish in the grocery store. I'm never skunked.
It's easier.
I find out what, and I don't have to dress up.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And I'm an awful sleeper as well.
Maybe it's a Shanley thing. Maybe it's a Shanley thing. I don't know.
So speaking of what's next, I spent some time as we were talking before we started the podcast, I spent some time on Online News Association, Reuters, McKinsey Company, especially on their global research side. And here's one thing I just want to share this number with you and the listeners. Today, there is approximately $40 billion of market space in what is called global VR and AR, which is virtual reality and augmented reality.
Yeah, wow.
And the projected growth by 2030 is $1.3 trillion. And again, I don't remember if I saw this on Reuters, Online News Association, or McKinsey. I started following this story about how holograms and augmented reality and virtual reality are going to eventually change how we as consumers go after the news or the stories or the information that we're looking for and whatever the platform might be. And they talked about how the traditional newspaper company, which has become more like yours, the multimedia, how they're going to play such a significant role in that. And as a guy that loves technology, I thought that's the coolest thing in the world because I'm going to be able to sit at my computer and I love Jeff Kolpak. I love how Jeff writes a story about sports, especially the Bison. And I thought to myself, I'm going to be able to have that bald-headed guy come up on a hologram at some point in time right on my computer, on my screen. I thought that's going to be a whole new type of experience for consumers. And it's even more personal than it is now.
Right. Well, I don't know too much about that, except this is a hologram. I'm actually on the beach in Florida right now. That's interesting. I think where I find that really interesting for our business, my 30 years at the company, probably 20 of them, we spent tons and tons of time on creating this product and then thinking about, okay, how do we get that product to Mike? And lots of meetings. And as you can imagine, we had, one point, I think we had 800-900 carriers, right? 12-year-old kids walking from door to door, every single household in each one of our 20-some communities, going by every house. Well, as our circulation, as readership of the printed product went down over the last 12 years, we didn't deliver it to each one of those people, right? We'd walk by a lot of empty, walk by a lot of houses and businesses. Well, soon our business model changed, and it went from selling advertising and distributing it to developing and building content. So when you talk about virtual reality, we need to find the more of the Jeff Kolpaks, right, that know their niche, their community. He knows Bison football like, you know, best in the planet. And how we distribute that, I'm going to let brainiacs like yourself or other people figure that out for us. And once we made that mind shift, and honestly, it was the last 2 years that we've made that shift in our mindset of like, oh, you know what? That's not as much of our business anymore. We used to have, you know, the Sunday paper had Best Buy and Target and Menards and all of these inserts because that's what we did. Well, you know what? We don't have very many carriers anymore. In the last year, we laid off 600 carriers. And if you want the printed product, except in Brainerd, we still deliver in Brainerd. But in most of our communities, we're delivering it through the mail. And yeah, we'll take your advertising. But our model has shifted to content. I'm intrigued, you know, what is next on the distribution level? And when you say, I'm going to have Jeff Kolpak on my desk, you know, he is small enough where he actually would fit. But so I don't know if you want him, you know, in your office, but maybe you do. But no, Jeff's one of the most talented writers, and he knows Bison like nobody's business. So
yeah,
and he's been cutting edge, doing the blogs, doing the podcast before anybody knew about him. And to his credit, he was pushing this 10 plus years ago, and we're all like, what's he talking about? You know, who's going to get their information that way? Well, you know, he was right.
I'm going to go back to, you actually teed me up for an inquiry of you.
All right.
And I didn't jump on it. I'm going to go back to it in a second when you talked about 2 years ago and that confused look on your face and what you just described with regards to carriers. I think I had shared with you probably in an email or something that I wanted so badly to be a form carrier because the guy that lived across the alley from me, Jess Bodelson, had the Fargo form route. And I'm going to say it was probably two, maybe not three complete blocks by two or three blocks maybe. And every once in a while I'd help him because he had to, because back then, I think it was in the afternoon. It was afternoon delivery, I think.
Yeah, we had both.
Oh. Morning, so this would have been in the 60s. You had both? Okay.
Yep.
So I would help him because he had football practice. And almost every, I'm going to say 80, 90% of the houses subscribed at that time.
Yeah, right.
I ended up with a Minneapolis Star Tribune, I think it was called then, route. And I had 33 papers. And it was from 19th Avenue to 12th Avenue, Broadway to University Drive. 33 papers in that footprint. And I think Mr. Fitzgerald, by the way, was one of the subscribers.
Okay.
The reason I bring that up is I'm a morning runner. I started running in college in 1975. Today, the delivery is not of the Bismarck Tribune, is not unlike my route. Because I see them drive, and they might put one or two papers on a block.
Right.
So now I wanted to tee it up that way to go back to the opportunity you provided me. Two and a half years ago, when change was happening so rapidly with regards to platforms and how people are getting their information and just the plethora of places you could go, and subscription was going down. There, you couldn't have had too many mornings where your feet, before your feet hit the floor, you were going, oh my gosh, what's the future going to be like? Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, yeah, I'll say since 2012, that was the high water mark at our company for our revenue and circulation. And so since then, it's been a decline. Now, at the beginning, it was smaller declines, but then it started to take big, huge chunks. And as readership went online, and we started our website back in 1997, so we were causing some of that because we're giving it away for free. So people are going to Inform or our Jamestown Sun or wherever it was for their information. It was free at that time. So, you know, people would say, well, why am I going to pay for it? You know, I'm getting it for free. And we thought at that time we would sell advertising online and we'd make up the difference. Well, that changed.
Here's the question I was going to ask after what you just said. When that light bulb went on and said, the big change is coming.
Yeah.
How did you internally, if it's not revealing trade secrets that maybe still go on, how did you internally say, this is what we need to do, this is how we have to change to content, and then content plus great personalities like a Jeff Kolpak,
right,
and shift our model from, well, we print them, we get them distributed, we sell advertising, but all that's changing. What was that like and how did you do it?
Yeah, well, that's a really big question. It took time. Thinking back today, we would have meetings going back easily 15, 20 years saying, hey, someday the printed paper is going to be gone. Yeah, right. When is that? And I remember probably 15 years ago sitting in an office and we said, hey, we should just pick a date. Let's just pick a date and so people will know that it's coming. And we were too afraid to pick the date because we thought, gosh, that might come up. Even back then, we'd say, let's do it in 20 years from now. So when it became reality, when our revenues started forcing us to make the decisions to go to a twice a week print schedule, and that COVID really kicked us in the butt to make those decisions fast. We knew they were coming. And I remember the day we had an executive team, about 12 of us sitting in a room, and a really smart guy who's still employed with the company, he's not in that exact position, brought a book and he was talking about change. And he's going through the list and he said, you know, an interesting thing, he said, most executive teams won't make it through the process. Kind of all looked at each other and, they're not talking about me. Well, subsequently, of that team that I put together 6 years ago, there's only one person that's there besides myself, and that's our chief content person, Mary Jo Hotzler. And every once in a while, her and I look at each other, you know, are the other ones the smart ones or are we the smart ones, you know? It's difficult. It is difficult to be brought up. And a lot of those people, just really good people, but they'd been in the business a long time and they saw the business here. And I saw it shifting over here. And at the time, a year plus ago, when we said, hey, you know what? We're only going to print twice a week instead of seven or five in some cases. And we are going to close down this printing plant and that one and consolidate the printing. It was met with anger, sadness, a lot of those. And in fact, I think, is Bismarck still doing 7 days a week? 5 days maybe? You know, a lot of the newspapers, these big companies that are in debt by billions, I say, hey, you know what? More power to them. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Hang on to the past as long as you can, guys. But hey, future's coming. So you know, get your paywalls up and start putting your information here because, you know, God bless you. So, and then you go down the list and there's some big companies that own newspapers around the country, around us. And yeah, I don't know how they do it, but anyways, they are. So the thrust of your question, very difficult, wasn't fast and easy, and I had to make some really difficult decisions and ask some people to go. Some people raised their hand and said, hey, you know what? I can't do this. I'm out. So replaced him with a fantastic executive team today that helped carry this out the last 2 years, and now we're going to expand. I can't announce anything today, but we're that far away from making some good announcements. So,
oh, that's exciting. To answer the question you asked me, we don't get a physical paper and haven't for a long time. I believe the Tribune is 5 day a week.
Printed.
By the way, to compliment your online delivery system, one thing I've noticed about, I'm going to say specifically the Fargo Forum, because I don't go to all of your papers. I typically consume two a day. Your staff turns on a dime to update information. It is really something remarkable. There are some papers that there's a breaking story you might not hear about. And I'm not blaming anybody. That's not my point. But what you're doing at the paper, if there's something new, it's almost immediate that somebody has posted something. And you can go to the main page and see that it's there if you're a subscriber, and then go to the story.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, we're not perfect by any means, but we have internally made the shift. We're digital first. That's, you know, where our bread and butter is coming from. And as we put up the paywall and we post those figures daily, people get it. They're like, oh, okay, my paycheck's coming because I sold more newspaper memberships here today. So, yeah, thanks for the compliment. We're not perfect. We have a new CMS rolling out. It starts next week, starts in Rochester, and it'll get to Fargo, and Fargo, I think, before Christmas. But that's going to make our website way better and faster and better for our reporting staff and for the viewers, too. So, yeah, we're just going to continue to get better. You know, I'm 57 years old. I don't want to retire. I've been in this business a long time, and I love it. And technology is part of it, marketing is part, and content, of course, is a big, huge part of it. So we see investment in those three areas, and we just keep plowing away.
Let me ask you this question with regards to content. I should probably narrow it down a little bit, and I'll use these examples. So if I go to the Fargo Forum, I might see an opinion piece written by Mike McFeely, and then I'll see something by Scott Hennon, and I might see something by Rob Port, and they all have different, types of approach to what they write, which I think is wonderful. But here, the question I was going to ask is that when you look at content, adding content or modifying it, do you take into some type of consideration the personality and the talent of the content provider, and then the tribes or followers that they have? Is that something that you take into
for a columnist? Yes. Opinion columnists, yes. I felt that we were about 3-4 years ago left-leaning. And when I added up our columnists from the right to the left, you know, as politics, you and I discussed just briefly, it's become so prevalent. My 14-year-old is talking about politics, you know, when she comes home to dinner, and it's embedded in almost everything, right? So is that we were like, okay, we have a lot of left columns. We had Rob Port, one of our better ones, but that was about it on the right. So yes, we've went out and looked for conservative voices, opinion. So in that sense, Yes. The news, the reporting side, you know, no. I mean, it. When you say personality, I'm assuming you're meaning opinion?
Yes.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, so other than the, you know, the old-fashioned job interview, but for columns, I mean, those, McFeely, Tony Bender, Rob Port, Betty Grande, you know, these are the people that on a daily basis I get email, love them or hate them, you know what I mean? And I love that part of our business. That's the forum. We are a forum of ideas. And I've is politics and COVID and Trump and anti-Trump and abortion and pro-life and pro-choice. These are big issues of our time. And if you can't discuss them somewhere, what's the world, right? And we feel that we're giving people a place on our opinion pages, print or online, outside of the Twitter and Facebook BS, you know. Twitter and Facebook are private businesses and they get to do what they want. And I'm all for them censoring. If they want to censor Mike Seminary and take him off, or Donald Trump or Bill Marcille, awesome. They get to. You know, they're not the media. They aren't. So they get to do that. We're never going to do that because we're not afraid of ideas. And Facebook's afraid of a lot of ideas. So, yeah. You know, more power to them.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing, Bill, but I'm thinking about the emails you get. When I was in 10 years of city politics, I got all sorts of emails and texts.
Was mayor, yeah, mayor's got to be one of the hardest, most difficult jobs in a city because you have to make my taxes go down, get my garbage because it blew away in the wind, and then, oh, by the way, your snowplow put snow on my sidewalk. Can you clean it up? Right? Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Where I was going to go with this is that this divisiveness that we have, it isn't different than it was 150 years ago or 100 years. What's made it different? I'll walk through this real quickly. When I was growing up, and for the most part, when you were, there was ABC, CBS, NBC, and then public television. There was the newspaper and radio. Then all of a sudden, cable TV was introduced to us. In a not too short a period of time, it was 24/7, and content back then is no different than it is today. They had to fill up this time with content. And all of a sudden, it became lots of opinion that was the content. And then technology, emerging technology, Facebook, the internet, all of that exponentially changed that. And so it gave people the opportunity, which is what's great about America, I'm going to give my opinion to Bill Marcille or Mike McFeely or Scott Hannon, and I'm going to do it in the way that makes me feel good. Well, all of a sudden, we got these constant battles, forgetting that at some point in time, can't we just sit down and talk about, you know, yeah, we have different opinions, but at the end of the day, when you need help, I'm going to come over and shovel your sidewalk. But we've kind of lost track of that.
I think Facebook and Twitter is not helpful for our society.
Bill, as you kind of look, this is down the road, let's use 5 years, because 5 years, I think, is a pretty good time reference, because technology, the disruptive tech, and you've lived through it. You have gone through disruptive technology that you thought maybe we're not going to survive. When you look down the road another 5 years between data, virtual reality, augmented reality, holograms, analytics, what do you think is going to be the next one that'll help your team, continue to do what you do now? You have great followers, you have great content providers, and you're growing. Which one of those do you think is going to be kind of the kingpin for you?
Yeah, Mike, good question. I don't know. The only thing I can relate it to is when I first started at the company in the 90s, my father didn't really know what to do with me. So he'd send me to meetings, newspaper meetings. And one of the meetings was called New Directions for News. Missouri School of Journalism put this on with the Newspaper Association. And it was, what's the future of the business? And I remember someone from HBO coming, and they had a documentary about their personal life. This was mid-90s. And there was this thing called the internet that they were talking about. And it was like, wow, interesting. Like movies on your computer about documentaries about people's life. And I don't remember what this documentary was. I just remember it was this person's life is interesting, thinking, you know, that seems like that could be a part of our business broadcast and content. Didn't know. So I don't see myself as a futurist. I don't know when I see it in front of me and I think, wow, how can I connect what I'm doing into that? And what you had said, you know, even the podcast thing, when that came up, what, maybe 5-6 years ago, people were like, hey, do you listen to Joe Rogan? I'm like, no. You know, yeah, listen to Joe Rogan, man. And then I started listening to Joe Rogan. You're like, wow, this is it. I got to find some space for these people on podcasts. And now it's become so overwhelming. Like there's so many good podcasts that I would like to subscribe to listen to, but I get it, right? So we started, in fact, my nephew, Billy Morehouse, my sister's son, he brought our podcast together and is trying to organize that and see that as a business. So we're pursuing that. We're competing with you, Mike. So thanks for having me on. But so I see, okay, yeah, podcast, I get it, right? So yeah, we're headed down there. I don't know personally. I can't tell you. Sorry, that's a long answer to tell you. I don't know the answer.
So see, by the way, I don't monetize my podcast, and that was an intentional decision.
Oh yeah.
My wife, when we were driving to Jim Lakatuk's funeral, I had interviewed Jim for a book that I wrote, Deb edited, but we've never published it. He was like one of 26 people I interviewed. And he asked me before he died if I'd give the eulogy at his funeral. And then the bugger dies and he ends up having two funerals. So I had to do one in Fargo and one in Butte where he was born.
Oh, no way, yeah.
And as we're driving to Butte, Deb said, you know, when you get ready to retire, you should start a podcast based on the book that you've never published. And I started thinking about that. And I thought, I like that idea because I love visiting with people. I love picking people's brains. I love learning from people and I love reading. But I made the decision that unlike when I'd launch a new radio station for Jim Lakatuk, I'd have to go call on Bill Marcille and say, this is why you should advertise on a radio station. You, of course, would say, we don't have any listeners. Why would I give you any money? A legitimate excuse, right?
Right.
And so I first of all said, I'm not going to ask anybody to monetize this because I'm new. And I also want to do something that I'm learning, that I'm becoming involved in a smaller group of podcasters where you push out content once a week, different guests, and if you do that, and it's almost a full hour, and if you do that for a full year, you're actually in a smaller group of podcasters. So I just, and besides that, if I was monetizing it and you were one of my sponsors, used to say, Mike, I don't like where this thing is going. That'd be like a job to me again. So that's why I'm doing the way I do it.
Yeah, good point. I would bet that there is a way for you to monetize it, though, and you should be making money, you know, if you're getting an audience. But yeah, give it away for a year and see where you end up. And, you know, if nothing else, you're having fun and meeting interesting people. But going back and looking at who you've had on, I would assume, you know, that audience that's listening right now, you're out there listening, is some advertiser is going to want to talk to them. Because, you know, the whole Google and digital advertising, Facebook and Google, what they're doing with it, I think is awful and terrible, and they're stealing money. And I think that I don't know if it's going to come back to local control. I sure hope it does, because I think most people look at Facebook and they're like, God, I didn't even know they sold ads. Well, yeah, $1 billion a month. You know, and they're disguising it. So, but anyways, that's another podcast.
Yeah, that is. I don't know if the company is the right term or not, but Click Content Studios.
Yep.
I went to that, spent some time. It looks like a brilliant idea to me. When did you start that? What was the purpose, and how is it working the way you wanted it to work?
Yeah, you know, it is. So Jim Manning and I, Jim was a radio guy, and back in 1998, we had a concert called Flood Aid, and he was like the host, all right? And I got to know Jim, and he was a radio guy. You probably know Jim. He was Jim Manning. He was went by Jim Daniels. Anyways, hired him. He was working at one of the, I think maybe Inkstead station, and hired him and said, hey, you know what? I don't know. There's something out there with video and our Inform, our website. Don't know exactly what it is, but can you help me come aboard and figure it out? And he did. And today, from that, we created a thing called Inform TV, which had a really limited lifespan. But it was basically Netflix, and it was basically all of our video content on one website. And from there, we said, geez, we started Egg Week TV, Rides with Jay Thomas, and we started these weekly video shows. And we thought, well, geez, we've got the production staff. Why don't we start branching out and doing it for other people? And Jim Heilman came aboard from Sundog and some other people from all over. And now to be honest with you, I don't even know. I think we've got about 25 employees within Click, and we do everything from Egg Week, a weekly egg show, to videos for corporations, TV shows and podcasts. And they do the Bison Media blog. All over the place. So it is successful. We're trying to continue to just keep it growing, and we've got some ad agency business. We represent some businesses, and so I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. It is working. Maybe we need some more focus, but it's growing. So yeah, Jim Manning has been working with that, Mary Jo Hotzler. So
you know what I think, Bill, between, let's go call it a division, Click and JobsHQ.com and the podcast piece and the video piece you just referenced. Here's what I think. While from the heyday of having, I think you said 2,600 employees down to the 1,000, if I'm recalling that correctly, here's what I see. And I'm wrong a lot, but here's what I see. I believe that the way you've diversified your company and the continued involvement of the new technologies as they evolve, and how consumers, whether they're advertisers or just consumers of the content like me, and as our life's changed because new technology is being introduced to us all the time. And even at 67, I'm saying, God, that's cooler than crap. I love what they're doing. I think there are going to be more businesses created, more opportunities available in form communications, but also created outside of that because of the importance of how we want to take in information. We're never going to leave the information age. It's just how we're going to consume it that's going to become even more personal, either because of our mobile devices, my phone, which I just showed you, or my iPad, or even my Apple Watch. I think the world is your oyster. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think it took us a while to get to that place and say, okay, what are we? Who are we? What do we do? And we like to say we transform and connect communities. So that might be Alexandria, Minnesota. It might be, you know, people who love cooking, might be bison fans, but we transform and connect and in our communities, and they can be any number of things. And you say, okay, that's what we do, right? And we don't distribute. Then all of a sudden, I don't need to figure out the next distribution device. You know, we'll let somebody else do that. And we're just going to say, we're going to take these communities of content and we're going to try to figure them out in Rochester, Minnesota, Mitchell, South Dakota, and try to do the best we can. And that's where our investment is. And, it's working. Somebody sent me an email the other day about an editorial about, woe is the newspaper business. The government needs to bail us out and give us money and reduce our taxes and all this stuff. I said, for the Gannetts and Lees and Alden Capitals, these big, huge companies that own most, 85%, I think, of all newspapers, I get it because they're doing a terrible job. So they need government handout. And you know what? We're not buying mansions or anything. We're doing it. We're selling memberships and we're doing a pretty good job. And I think if other papers did that, they would too. The business is great. So I agree with what you're saying. I think our world's our oyster, man. Let's keep doing it. And we'll have to stop printing at some point in the fairly near future because it's so expensive and people enjoy. My 85-year-old mom loves getting her information on her iPad. She loves to read the e-paper, right? She loves it, and she knows how to do it, and she's figured out her password and all that stuff, and we're going to give it to her, and we'll give it to my 14-year-old who just wants to know about TikTok stuff. We don't have a TikTok channel. That's what we need. We need a TikTok channel.
I should have asked
your kids or grandkids, anybody in TikTok? I mean, I don't know who created this. This is the devil for sure.
Oh, yeah. I don't do it. And I.
Nothing good could come of TikTok. Trust me. That's awful.
I should have asked you this question when you brought it up. And sometimes people tee me up for a question. I don't go there. But the pandemic and COVID, if I heard you correctly, in some ways, that was an opportunity for you to more rapidly evolve to where you wanted to go. And were it not for COVID, it might not happen at the same pace. Is that kind of how I heard that?
Yeah. We knew change was coming. We knew we would be printing maybe 2 days a week. Maybe at that time, we maybe thought three or four. We knew that advertising was continuing to decline. Well, one day in March of 2020, I get an email that I think it was 18 advertisers, print advertisers, stopping because of COVID. And that meant, tens of millions of dollars in revenue, meaning, and we weren't doing great at that point anyways, so it was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And my dad called and said, my chairman of the board, my boss, happens to be my father, called and said, hey, family's not going to pay for the newspaper division. The Time broadcast has continued to do well, but we're not going to continue to fund the newspaper division. Figure it out. Holy shit. and we're losing money at this point. We're losing it by the day. A lot of money every single day. So, I had to figure it out and a lot of sleepless nights figured it out, and made some tough calls, and we laid off 600 carriers and 300, full-time employees and closed two press rooms at that time. That was not easy. And a lot of those carriers had been with us 25, 30 years. I knew tons of them. It was, I had three ulcers. Talk about not sleeping. It was not a happy time. It was a terrible time. But now looking back a year later, like, holy shit, that saved us. I mean, that is what saved us. That was the moment when we had to make unbelievably difficult decisions to save us. And, you know, it was, were we going to survive and then thrive, or were we going to just close up shop? And a fifth of all newspapers in this country have closed. A fifth. Like 20%? Jeez, oh, that's a lot, right? Closed up. They said, I can't do it anymore. And we were not going to be that. And, you know, fifth generation, I was not going to have that go down on my watch. So I was like, okay, I'm going to man up, pull my big boy pants on and figure it out. Had some great people to help. Bill Rouse, our chief operating officer, came in right before COVID. He started in October and COVID hit, what, in March? He was a guy who had been president of Cargill Seed, lots of experience. And thankfully, God brought him into my life and he helped. It was him and I, we rolled up our sleeves and did it. So yeah, difficult time, but we're a better company for it today.
Yeah. You know, what you just described, here's how I heard it. You know, everything has a life cycle, and particularly businesses, they have that bell curve of growth. And when you reach the top of the bell and you start going down the other side, that's never good. And reinventing the next curve is always really, really hard. And I'm, you know, because of your experience and your great team and the phone call from your dad and COVID, you really had an opportunity to say, I get a chance to bring up the next bell.
You're right. It gave us, today it was an opportunity. At the time, it didn't feel like that, but we laid off 900 people. We closed two press rooms, one being in Fargo, you know, our flagship. And I didn't get a lot of pushback, you know, and if we did, it was like, guys, we have to survive, period, end of story. If we don't make these decisions, we'll end up selling out to Gannett or somebody. I mean, we won't survive. So, you know, when you hear that, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. I understand. Now, I would get some emails or letters, mostly handwritten letters, from people that are 95 and don't have a cell phone, don't want internet access, and they miss their daily newspaper. And, you know, my heart bled for them and I felt sorry for them, but what are you going to do? I mean, it was our audience, our future couldn't be built or handicapped or handcuffed to that person that didn't want to get cell phone or an iPad. So yeah, I feel much better about our business today than, yeah, 2 years ago. I probably wouldn't even, honestly, I wouldn't have taken this call 2 years ago because I was so lost. I was like, holy crap. I don't know what I'd say.
I appreciate that you did, by the way.
This is fun. Yeah. Most media is competitive, so I don't get to talk to a lot of local people because they don't want to interview me.
So here's my last question. You're asked to speak to an auditorium on whatever college campus it is. And let's say there's 400 or 500 students in their first year, they're freshman students. All of them have some interest in pursuing a career either in print journalism or multimedia, or they want to be on the advertising side of some media company. And you have this unique background. What's the one thing you even though they have they're a little different, right? What's the one thing you'd want them to know about what's in front of them?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I asked you, what are you going to ask me? You didn't put that in your question because, you know, that's there's a really, really good answer in there. So off the cuff, I would say we as a business are needed more today than ever in world history. So if you think that journalists don't have an important job and that journalists can't change the world, you are sadly wrong. And I feel that our business, the independent journalism in finding truth, right, finding the truth, is going to be so much more important than it ever has been in world history and continues to be. And I was lucky enough to have lunch with, Watergate.
Woodward?
Bob Woodward, right? Sitting at lunch. And I asked him, what's the scariest thing? He said, this was probably 5-6 years ago, 85% of what the government is doing is secretive. They're only scratching the surface. And that was years ago. And today, I would guess that it's probably worse. And our job as journalists, the watchdog part of our job, watching mayors, gotcha, Mike, mayors, city commissions, you know, senators, state legislators, presidents, pharmaceutical companies, you name it, whatever it is, big business, oil companies, the green, Dakota Pipeline people. I mean, I don't care what it is. That's what journalists' job is. That's what we do. We do it every day. We record history every single day. And I tell our employees, 100 years from now, someone is going to be Googling November 5th, Friday at 2 o'clock, and they're going to find this podcast, and they're going to find, you know, information and news that they had written. And that's what we do. That's our business. And I love it. I get it. It's not for everybody. And it is 7 days a week. It's 24 hours a day. And sometimes it drives people crazy. And but I just one last thing. We went around the room once in our executive meeting and said, what did you used to do as a little kid? And it was interesting. Most people put puzzles together or Legos or Lincoln Logs, and none of them followed the directions. And I was like, you know, I used to put together model cars and planes, and I never followed the directions. And I was like, you know what? That's what I'm doing today. Our executive team, we don't have blueprints. We don't have a book. We don't have anything. We're putting this together piece by piece and just enjoying it. And what we create is what we create. So there's no book. So I don't know. Yeah, that's a long answer. It's a good question. I should think of a better answer. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to think of a really good question.
There's a reason I never push those questions out, because I want it from the heart. And, you know, I'm actually going to add to your answer, because before we started the podcast, you were talking about that you're a listener of music. Here's something I think I've learned about Bill Marcell Jr. today. You're a real good listener, and you're not, you know, most people are not very good listeners, but the real good listeners, I think, listen not just to learn, but to also understand. And I think if somebody gave that question in advance, you'd probably add that. You're a real good listener, Bill, and I've had a lot of fun today. I appreciate you so much coming on.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for asking me. And if I'm a good listener, I'll take that. Thank you very much. That's because I'm married to a Brazilian who's a very good talker. She's very good. So I've learned to become a good listener. But no, you're a great interview. Super laid back. Great style. Love it.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Appreciate it a lot.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.